I'm not going to let people's negativity, and I'm not going to let people's prejudice, and I'm not going to let people's insults create a prison that I'm going to live in. I can decide whether I live there or not. Most of the time that I was there, very angry and depressed, just because I had to face this thing that I didn't want to face, that I was blind, visually impaired, and I didn't want to believe that. And here I was now having to face and accept that. I was terrified. I was afraid. I wouldn't get on a bus. I wouldn't. The awful thing is I wouldn't get on a bus with sight. And then I go to Blind Incorporated and they shove me on a bus without any sight. It was like, what? What do I do? What do I do? What do I do?
Welcome to Blind Abilities. I'm Jeff Thompson. Today we have Dan Bernstrom, an author who just released his first book. It's a children's book. It's called One Day in the Eucalyptus Tree. It has a neat pattern of words, and it's a great read-aloud book. Dan Bernstrom is also the Learning Resource Center Coordinator at Minnesota State College Southeast. He is also the Chief Diversity Officer and a loving parent and a graduate of Blind Incorporated, and was on the cover of the State Services for the Blind of Minnesota's annual report. I heard about Dan's release of his new book, One Day in the Eucalyptus Tree, and so I pre-ordered it, and it just arrived yesterday. And I was excited, and, well, I bet you Dan is excited too. Dan, welcome to Blind Abilities.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Glad to be here.
We're glad to have you. I suppose you're pretty excited. Your new book just hit the shelves yesterday.
You know what? I'm really not as excited. It was about 2.5 years ago that my daughter was 6 months old when I got the call that the book was going to be acquired, and I was offered a contract. And I've been working on it, and it just seems kind of unreal that it's here. So, like, it's out and everyone's excited, but I think I had my excitement 2 years ago. It's hard to explain. Is it really real, or is this just am I living a pretend life, I guess?
Well, I bet your kids in the background have heard this story once or twice.
I think this is probably the biggest thing that I'm excited about is those two. I have daughter LaVonne and a son named Grace, and that's what's really exciting. But yeah, the book's incredible. That's actually happened. Just, it's kind of unreal.
You authored the book, and the illustrations are also getting high acclaims. How did that process come about?
The illustrator, his name is Brendan Wenzel. He is rather new. What happens with writing is that there's some author illustrators. So an author illustrator is someone who writes the text and draws the pictures. I don't draw pictures, but I write. So what happens is the book is acquired by the publishing house. So HarperCollins acquired the book, and then they find an illustrator. So Brendan had illustrated two other books at the time, one called Some Bugs, which is a good read aloud book, and it's beautifully illustrated, and another book called, is it Little Beasties or something like that, and from the same author-illustrator team. And so he was rather new, and then he gets brought on with me. So we're both rather new to the, yes, he is popular, but we're rather new to the whole picture book scene.
Daniel, I read a lot of reviews once I got the book, and it seems like the language and the pattern of your words seems to get a lot of praise.
That meant a lot to me. The editor actually thought I'd made a mistake. She wanted me to change that. She thought that I that because I wasn't rhyming right, and they were nervous. They were very nervous about what was going to happen and how it was going to be perceived because I didn't know how to rhyme. So one of the reviewers is Julius Lester. He's an older African-American writer who has won multiple awards. He is mainly famous for his work on, I think it's Tales of Uncle Remus. Very, very well respected African-American writer. And so they gave it to him for his review of the book. And he wrote back and said, "I don't see there's a problem. This author loves words and he loves how they sound. And it seems to be the general consensus that, yeah, this guy isn't crazy. He knows exactly what he's doing." And that has been really, that has put my editor at a lot of ease. It's kind of a new, it's not that common way to write. It's kind of a syncopated off language structure to me that sounded really fun and that I put in the book.
Your book reminded me of a creative writing exercise a teacher had us do. And I did this one where it was titled "Ever Laugh a Lot of Laughs."
Yeah.
And it was just an exercise just to get the tongue rolling and getting words that sounded good together. And that's what your book reminded me of.
Exactly. And that's what a lot of it actually is. I love how you said that. Ever laugh a lot of laughs. And that's what language, especially for children, that's a lot of what language is. And early in my schooling, I read a writer called Yuri Shulevitz. He wrote about how to write children's books, and he basically said, the words are the soundtrack to the child's silent film. The words are like music. And ever since he said that, that's how I want to write. I want my words to be music to help bring the pictures to life.
The rhythm of your voice just becomes the ambience in the background.
Yeah, and there's a recent review just, I think, yet 2 days ago by Betsy Bird from the School Library Journal. It was a beautiful review, and I thank her for such a lovely review of the book, but she really drew attention to the language and how the language really stands out. The illustrations are lovely, and she mentioned that both of them are equally lovely, but the language is different in how it is as she called, a master read-aloud book. Now, being visually impaired, that meant so much to me. This is a master read-aloud book, because I remember growing up, sitting at the back of the class, and not being able to see what's on the board, not being able to see the teacher turn the pages and see what pictures were there. I could never see what the teacher had. And of course I was ashamed. I was ashamed of my sight and that I couldn't see much. And instead of being like right up front so I could really try to see what was going on, I sat back with everyone else. I understand where kids are and you can't always be at the front, but what happens if I could give kids, both visual kids and kids that are visually impaired and kids that can't, you know, kids that can't see, that there's a book for them too. Because there are yummy words and it sounds great. And I think I would have enjoyed this book if I was young because of the words.
Well, that's pretty neat to create something as you would want it to be created from the perspective of a listener.
Well, I think it happened. I mean, it's just who I was. I can see, I can clearly see. But I just can't see very well. And growing up, I mean, that caused problems. If I could only see something, well, yeah, you can see something, but if you can't see well enough, you can get yourself into some trouble. Things happen and that eventually becomes who you are. I'm visually impaired. That's the truth. I can't drive. I take the bus places. I use a white cane. On my computer, I use the expand function on my Mac and the reading function on my Mac, depending on when I need it. I use both when I'm writing, because if I write without my computer being able to read it to me, it's terrible. because I can't see what I'm actually writing. But if the computer reads it back to me, now I can see what I'm writing. If I didn't have blind techniques, I could not be able to write. That being a piece and a part of who I am comes across in how I am going to write. So you cannot separate the visually impaired writer or the blind writer from what they write. And what's, I think, interesting to see is you're seeing that come out, and why people are, I think, a little interested or maybe excited is because they haven't seen too much of this before. Well, there's not too many visually impaired writers writing.
Mm-hmm. So do your synthetic voices do it justice?
Not at all. But you know what? At least I know what's there. It's
one day, the leaves of the eucalyptus tree hung askew in the air where no eyes could see.
Man, I try to write without it, and it's embarrassing. I need synthetic voices.
Yeah, they just don't have the right cadence. They don't chug like a choo-choo train.
Chug-a-chug-a-choo-choo. Chug-a-chug-a-choo.
I guess that's where creativity comes in. But the other interesting thing about the book that I didn't even realize is that it's a story about a boy that gets swallowed by a snake. And the boy has to figure out a way to get out of the snake. And the reviewer commented that she said she was kind of confused when the snake ate a beehive. Because she goes, that wouldn't be the thing that I would want the snake to eat. The little boy in the belly of the snake doesn't tell the snake what to eat. He doesn't say, hey, I think you should eat this sloth, or I think you should eat this bear, or I think you should eat this beehive, which would be really uncomfortable with a bunch of stingy bees. Well, that's because the boy is blind, because he's in this dark snake and he can't see anything. I didn't even realize that until I read a review about, I basically took away this kid's sight and he has to try to figure out his way through this situation without being able to see.
That's really interesting. So your book, One Day in the Eucalyptus Tree, has been published. Have you been working on any other books?
This is my first book out. And then the editor, HarperCollins, has acquired two more books. Picture books take a while, so two more years. Two more years till the next one comes out, so.
So you've already celebrated your next two books, and we got to wait 2 years.
I know. So, and that refers to that first question. It's like, yes, I'm so excited. And there's also a lot of fear is, what happens if people don't like it? It's just, you put a lot of yourself into something, and for people to say it's not good, it really hurts, even though it might be true. So there's a lot of fear that comes with publishing a book.
My daughter just flipped open the first page and read a page or two. I just wanted to hear the words. I don't even remember the words, but I heard the cadence, that pattern. I said, oh, and I liked it.
Yeah, one day in the eucalyptus tree hung a scare in the air where no eye could see. Just a dot, da, da, dot, da, dot, da, da, dot, da, da, da. It's fun.
She fell right into the pattern.
Yeah, I mean, some people might just follow the words and you'll be good.
You got to get that bouncing ball on top of the words to go, so they follow it.
Exactly. This is.
So you went to college.
I did. I originally went to a college in California because I thought that I was going to go to Hollywood and write movies and direct films, and I was going to be great. I'm from Iowa, so this little Iowa boy was going to go out there. And California wasn't for me. It was very busy. I didn't like the rat race, and so I left California and I returned to the Midwest. I went to Minnesota, where I finished my degree in electronic media communications with an emphasis in audio editing and radio.
So you gave up the bright lights for the northern lights.
Yes, yeah, you could say that. But then I realized there's a problem because I have a degenerative eye disease. And even though I've struggled to see, and I think maybe kids, especially with degenerative eye disease, like it starts out fine. You start out fine, and then every year it gets worse, and then you can't see what you used to see. And I was writing a book on Eric Weinmeier. Eric Weinmeier and I have the same eye disease. And Eric Weinmeier,
he's the rock climber.
Yep. So Eric Weinmeier was the first and only blind man to climb Mount Everest. Eric Weinmeyer has climbed the tallest peaks on the seven summits, the highest mountains on every continent.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. He's an amazing man. And I was writing a book about him just in graduate school. And I didn't want to write a book about him because we have the same eye disease. And when they say he climbed the mountain sightless, he couldn't see a thing. And it was intimidating, inspiring, and kind of a rough truth to handle that this man who has the same eye disease as me. And this is a really interesting point, is I have sight and I would never climb a mountain. I have sight, and this man was able to get a job teaching school. This man who has no sight could do 100, 1,000 times more things than I could do. So what does Eric know that I don't? Because you can have sight, but you can be just as limited, because it's not that functional. You have the ability, but it's not functional. So if Eric Weinmeyer could do that, then...
So you're writing a book, getting more and more depressed.
Okay.
The more exciting things he does, the more depressed he get. One more summit, and I'm done.
Yeah, exactly. Just an amazing, amazing story. I had sight, and it was getting worse. That's what happens, is as you get with these degenerative eye disease, you can't see what you used to see. You can't see faces anymore. Things just kind of wash out and become this blur in front of you, and all the detail goes away. And I was editing. I lost the ability to see a piece of the editing software that was really necessary. It was gone. I couldn't find it in the software anymore. And I thought, what am I going to do? Because I was depending on this sight. I get really close to the computer. It's like, well, I can do this. I can do this because I can see. But I couldn't see it anymore. And I realized something has to change. That's when I contacted State Services for the Blind here in Minnesota to get help.
Wow. That must have been a moment for you.
Well, I think it was a moment that I was dreading my whole life. I went to Blind Incorporated, which is a rehabilitation or training institution in Minnesota for adjusting to blindness in blind individuals. And there are several people like me who have these degenerative eye diseases. And they talk about driving and holding on to their driver's license. And I was driving. You can fake it and get by with things, and you can drive. And I remember I was at college just as things were starting to really dive. And I was driving at night home, and previously I knew where the exit was to get off to the place where I was staying. There was one night where I didn't see it, and I just kept going, and then I couldn't see where I was on the road. And I eventually was able to make my way back, and then I didn't drive at all anymore after that. It was too terrifying. Like, what happens if I had hit someone? What happens if I had gotten in an accident? What happens if I had gone off the road? I didn't know where I was. How do I get around now? All I know how to get around is driving. I don't know how to use a bus. I don't know how to see the street signs on the bus, because that's too far away for me. So I was completely immobilized. I could not move. The only thing I knew how to do was walk.
So you probably didn't even know any blind people at this time.
No, not at all.
Then you walk in the door at Blind Incorporated, and there's got to be about 15 people, 15 blind people milling about.
Well, and I was struck by what blind meant. I didn't know what blind meant. And I met a guy named Al, and he was one of the recruiters there, and he was on his computer, and he was doing things on his computer with JAWS at twice the speed that I could do them. But I had sight. I was so good. I was better than all the other blind people out there. Here's Al, who can't see his computer screen.
Al Spooner.
Al Spooner, yes. And he's just whipping around his computer. And the thing is reading at lightning speed. And I don't even know what the computer is saying, but he can move. I want that, because just because you have sight doesn't mean that you can use a computer or use it efficiently or know where you are. I thought blind meant that you couldn't see anything at all. And so I learned very quickly that blind is a spectrum. Actually, those that couldn't see anything at all, who were much more high functioning than I was.
I mean, that's not funny. I'm just
humbling.
When you first get into one of those places, you know, a training center, and I remember I went to a training center, and when I first walked in, I walked away from it going, I got to get out of here. And then about 2 weeks later, I'm like, this is the place for me.
Yes. And just the hope that it can give you. And I mean, I can honestly say today, even though I hated most of the time I was at Blind Incorporated, because it was traumatic because they have you blindfolded or with the sleep shades on for your time. So you learn how to operate without sight. It was very, very trying and traumatic. And I was angry. I was so angry most of the time that I was there, very angry and depressed, just because I had to face this thing that I didn't want to face, that I was blind, visually impaired, and I didn't want to believe that. And here I was now having to face and accept that. But if it hadn't been for Blind Incorporated, I would not be able to even be, not even close to be where I am today.
And then you pick up life skills and little tidbits of this and that.
I mean, even learning, like they have that shop class where you're using, where you're using power tools. And in the shop, I think you taught shop, didn't you, Jeff?
Yeah, I was there for just over 5 years.
Yeah, I was terrified because I couldn't see. And when I told my mother what I was doing, I think she was basically about to say, you get out of there right away because something terrible is going to happen.
That's part of, you know, doing something that you actually wouldn't think you would ever do, to challenge yourself to do something that's not expected of you, is one of the main things for that class.
And that's exactly what it taught me. It taught me that I could do, and I have the project here in my house. And when I see it and I think that I can't do something because I can't see well enough to do it, I look at the project and I say, Daniel, remember when you couldn't see anything at all and you could do it? So it's like, yep, you can. When you're at your job and they say, we need you to travel someplace, and they don't think you can, and you say, yes, I can. I can travel. Well, how are you going to do it? I don't know how I'm going to do it. I don't know how I'm going to, but I can. That's one of the skills I learned, besides the motivation, just the skills that I learned at Blind Incorporated, is that there's a way around the problem. It might not be how sighted people handle it, but there's a blind way to handle it that can deliver the same result.
Mm-hmm. The alternative techniques.
And that, if I didn't have that, I couldn't do my job as a Learning Resource Center coordinator. I couldn't do, and I travel to Minneapolis, St. Paul once or twice a month without people knowing how I do it. Dan gets there and he gets back and they go, but you can't drive. You're right, I can't drive, but I could do it.
So Learning Resource Center coordinator, that's got to be a busy place, especially at the end of terms.
Oh, it's, you know what? It is always busy. It is always busy. And I think that's the main thing that just zaps my memory, is that it's constantly going and there's people coming in that need help. And it's a very busy place. Probably one of the busiest places on campus.
So you schedule and you oversee, what, 25, 30 people or something?
Yes, I do.
I read up on you.
You did read up on me. You know your stuff.
Honestly, it was very interesting researching Daniel Bernstrom, the new author that's being published, actually attended Blind Incorporated and was on the cover of the annual report of State Services for the Blind. And then when I mentioned your name at home, my wife, Lori, said, Daniel Bernstrom? He was a student of mine. Aw. And then I read that you were Learning Resource Center coordinator, chief diversity officer of your college. You know, I used to teach at a Learning Resource Center, so it kept on getting more intriguing. And all your titles and acronyms.
I know, it's a lot of alphabet soup in there, right? Learning Resource Center, LRC coordinator, chief diversity officer, CDO. That's academia for you. And what do all these mean? I help with resumes and cover letters. I do a lot of that with students, especially as they get closer to the end. They need someone to edit their resume or cover letter, and they often come to me.
So do you get, at the Learning Resource Center, do you get people that have difficulty reading or visually impaired?
So I'm glad you brought that up. We do not have many visually impaired or blind students at Southeast Technical. Mm-hmm. We're more rural. And part of that is just, I think, because of the, it's a rural area with, there's one bus that runs, and yeah, it's not as reliable as Minneapolis, St. Paul, which is slightly annoying when you're out there in the cold, in the bitter cold, and you're waiting and you're like, where are they?
One bus that runs and two that don't.
This is stuff.
That seems to be a big thing in Minnesota. If once they come for training at Blind Incorporated or Vision Loss Resource in a hub, or you have the Lighthouse in Duluth, we happen to have three,
yes.
People like to stay, especially in Minneapolis area, because it's a transportation, your ability to get about and do everything.
Part of the blind skills that I had to learn, which helped me with my job, is that I have to be really on top of things. I think I'm really on top of things at work, and then not so much at home, but because you really have to be able to coordinate and predict things ahead of time and plan for the future. And those are all skills that are really good in business as a Learning Resource Center coordinator or as a chief diversity officer. I just did something for my president, and my president responded back. She goes, you're the first one to get it done. This project that I needed, you're the first person to respond to this. She goes, thank you so much. We have to stay organized, because if we don't stay organized, we lose things. We can't find it. It's definitely a blind technique that I've carried over into my job.
Yeah, out of sight, out of mind, right?
If you don't know where things are, how can you track them or manage them? So my job just is actually coordinating, taking care of people, and scheduling, which is actually all done via computer and phone calls and conversations.
And staying on top of it.
Yeah. Staying organized, yes.
Well, that's really cool. You use an iPhone.
I do use an iPhone.
Why do you use an iPhone?
I use all Mac products with that degenerative eye disease. And it's weird. I have this eye disease called juvenile X-linked retinoschisis. And it affects everyone different. For Eric Weinmeier, it took most of his vision right away from birth. For me, it was a much slower process. So legally blind, but we can see something. So the Mac products are great products because they can read and they can both expand.
You're going to use the tools you have.
I'm really glad you bring up that point. I can walk without a cane. A lot of blind people can walk without a cane. I went to the National Federation for the Blind conference. It was at that time in Florida. And there was a lot of blind people walking without a cane tucked in their back pocket. But when the lights go out and it's dark outside, I'm done. I'm stuck. I can't move. So if I don't have my cane with me, if I don't know how to use a cane, I am immobilized and I don't know what to do. That's why I always, 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 always keep a cane with me. I'm very glad that I went through Blind Incorporated, because I can maneuver. I can move. I do not need sight. I've done it. And that was a really important thing. So I walked into a job interview, stated right up front, I'm visually impaired. I can't see that well. They can't ask me that question. I don't look like I'm blind at all. And I stated it right up front. And of course they had questions, and I let them have their questions. But when you walk into a job interview, or like when you've been able to navigate downtown Minneapolis, which is terrifying, if you don't know what you're doing, once you learn blind techniques and you do it, you're like, oh, I know what's going on. And they ask you, are you sure you can do this? And I laughed at them. And I said, have you ever navigated downtown Minneapolis without any sight? And one of them said, I won't even drive in downtown Minneapolis. I won't even drive in the cities, because they're from rural Minnesota. It's like, I wouldn't even do it. I know you think that I can't do everything that you think I can do because I need sight, but I've done all these things, and I know that whatever you throw at me, I can do. And I got the job. It's that type of mindset of that Blind Incorporated helped me see that I could do things that I thought were impossible. And I think that I can only do so many things. Sometimes I get in that pattern. I can't do that because I can't see that. And I have to fight that constantly and say, yes, you can do that. Remember what you did. And I have the bell that they give you at the end after you graduate, sitting on my desk, just reminding me, yes, you can, Daniel. Because, yeah, it's hard. Sometimes it's really hard, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, the graduation bell. Give it a ring. Because, you know, they teach you skills, and you get to use them and practice them and gain confidence. And people wonder, you know, is it the skills or is it confidence? Actually, I have to say it's both.
It is both. I think Jim Rohn, a success person, said something about, is it all about motivation? Someone asked him. He goes, no, it's not about motivation if you don't have training. Because if you're motivated and you don't have training, then you have a motivated idiot. An idiot without training stays an idiot. So then if you motivate him, you have a motivated idiot. So you need the training with the motivation.
Well, there's another way of putting that. I used to say if a guy comes in a jerk and gets good training, he might leave, but he'll still be a jerk with good skills.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And I think they do their job when you leave there confident enough, you almost gain yourself back.
I would say I gained more. Because I think I'd been living with this vision loss. I mean, my best vision was when I was like 7, a child. And then from then, my nickname in high school, in middle school, was Blind Boy. You know, I mean, yeah, it's like you could say it's demeaning and you know what? I'm fine with that.
Well, you wouldn't write a book called Blind Boy in a Snake.
Yeah.
High school can be cruel.
high school can be cruel. High school can absolutely be cruel. I was also the class president, and I was also the student body president. And I mean, I think part of that is it helped motivate me. There will always be people in this world. There will always be people that are cruel. Mm-hmm. I learned that. I've lost jobs because people saw my white cane. People said all kinds of mean things. People say all kinds of mean things. They treat you in awful ways when you're with that cane. They don't look at you. They won't talk to you. People can be very cruel, but you can't change people. You can't change cruel people. Then you're just going to sit down and say, people are cruel. I can't get anywhere in life. Mm. You have to be able to move. You have to be able to change their perception, change their perception of you. Show them that you can do something.
You can use a cane and walk away from them.
Exactly. Yes, people are cruel, and I can't change that. And I've been hurt and discriminated against and pushed, physically pushed and made fun of and mocked and led into bad situations because I was, I'm disabled. There is that in the world, but there will always be that in the world. And how am I, how are you, how are we going to address that? And part of that is like, I'm not going to let people's negativity, and I'm not going to let people's prejudice, and I'm not going to let people's insults create a prison that I'm going to live in. I can decide whether I live there or not.
It seems like you've made that decision.
Well, you can always go back though. So you have to keep making that decision, and it's hard. It's hard, but it's worth it.
Yeah, going back. So easy, wouldn't it be? I mean, I remember watching students leave Blind Incorporated, walk down that sidewalk, and you know, you just wonder as they leave, are they going to apply the skills and confidence that they've gained over the, you know, 6 to 9 month program? Or are they going to go back to their community and fall back into the same comfort zones and not challenge themselves? But look at you, you're always accepting the new challenges in front of you.
You mentioned like Learning Resource Center coordinator and then chief diversity officer. Well, well, that was given to me. So on top of all the other busy stuff I'm doing, then they give me more. Then they send me places, and then now I'm making big, now I have the ability and opportunity to make really big decisions about diversity on campus, including the treatment of disabled people on campus, because I am now the chief diversity officer. So now I'm in a position of helping other disabled people at the college not be discriminated against. So that that there's equitable hiring practices, and that we have an inclusive setting for everyone at the college. And so many times I was on the committee for charting the future for all of the Minnesota State College and University system. So here's this learning, which I'm on the bottom of the, because I'm brand new, I'm on the bottom of everything. I'm the lowest of the low, and I get placed on this thing called charting the future for all the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities in the state, which is about 30 institutions. And I get placed on a diversity committee that is going to help set the agenda for all 32 schools, to set the agenda for diversity for all 32 schools. And what I found really interesting was that people were glossing over disability. They just wanted to talk about race and gender, and which are all great things, but what about disability? So I was able to help bring that piece to the Minnesota State College, the MinSCU system, and I'm hoping, at least I was there, at least I brought it up, at least I was a champion for disability there. So you never know where you're going to be placed, and maybe you can give hope to, or maybe, you know, students that eventually come to Southeast Tech, or people that apply to Southeast Technical who are disabled, blind, or whatever, that there is an opportunity for them because that prejudice has already been addressed, and that they won't be turned away, and that they will be given a chance. And that's what I hope for the Minnesota State College system.
Well, you're quite the ambassador for that school, because the students that attend there get to experience your experiences and share your role modeling, and they see that, and they know you can do more. You got their confidence.
But I mean, I don't even know how it happened. It just happened. I mean, I got there. I did my job, and I did my job to the best of my ability. I was thankful because I'd been turned away from so many jobs, applying. And well, are you sure you can do that? No, you can't really see. And I thought I lost the interview because I wanted to be honest. I thought I lost the interview. My wife said, how did it go? And I said, well, I told them I was visually impaired blind, so I'm probably not going to hear back from them.
So she didn't make you dinner that night, huh? Every day you walk into that campus, every day you're on campus, every day you're punching into work and leaving work to and fro, there's, you know, on a daily basis, hundreds of people witnessing your presence, you know, your consistency and all that. So you're actually changing, you know, the perceptions of so many people every day of what it is to be blind.
And that's the thing that they say. That's the thing that they say. It's like, Dan, I have no idea.
And that goes back to what you've learned at Blind Inc. You said those transferable skills gave you the confidence that you know what you've done, can be applied in different areas, like in the Learning Resource Center.
If I didn't have those transferable skills, I'm speechless because I would be lost. I didn't know what to do. I was terrified. I was afraid. I wouldn't get on a bus. I wouldn't. Because, the awful thing is, I wouldn't get on a bus with sight. And then I go to Blind Incorporated and they shove me on a bus without any sight. It was like, what? What do I do?
You probably never even noticed public transportation. Unless it was in front of you slowing you down. Well, look at you today. Now you, and I mean, you celebrated 2 years ago. Well, we're celebrating your book, One Day in the Eucalyptus Tree. Lori held the book and went, "Oh, my student."
Well, she was so instrumental. I mean, Lori Brown was so instrumental. She was a great listener, and she encouraged, and she, it was so frustrating. Because I think for especially Lori Brown was in the home management area of how to do with your clothes, and I'm much more organized with my laundry now. Thank you, Lori. And I know where my shampoo is, and it's in one spot, and nobody better move it from that spot. That is my spot. And Lori, if I could tell Lori anything, I'd say I don't have. Because she said, keep your shampoo here and keep your body wash or soap here. I got the body wash, shampoo, all in one. So I'm set. I only need one place. I don't need two.
There you go.
I needed that person who had lost sight. Lori Brown could also has a degenerative eye disease. And someone who understood what I was going through and understood the emotional. And there were some members at Blind Inc. that I felt like didn't understand.
Well, yeah. I mean, everybody's blindness is so unique. I think it's really great that at the training centers that all the instructors are not clones of each other, you know, that there's different personalities, different eye conditions that each of the trainers have gone through and experienced, and they can share that with you, or you can relate to, you know. Not only that, there's students there that you could probably relate to, because not everyone's blindness is the same.
You do, and that's really important, and you can graduate from that program, and I mean, it doesn't mean that you're set for life. It doesn't mean that you're going to not have challenges ahead of you. When I go someplace, yeah, it takes me a while. I have to wait a lot. All right, when I take the train, most people can drive places, but I take the train. I have a book to listen to, which is fantastic. I love my iPhone to listen to books. Using yes, I wrote a book called The Eucalyptus Tree. Yes, I listen.
You got a fan out there.
My daughter. I listen to books and speed it up so I can read 10 times as fast as everyone else, which is fantastic. But I don't move as fast as other people, and I wait, and I sometimes wait in the cold, and I can't see what they see, and sometimes it's annoying. Like someone's presenting, and it's like I'm in the back of the room, and I'm still lost, and I have to listen very carefully. So life is not without challenges at all, and vision gets worse, and I have to use more and more and more blindness techniques every year. Every year, I have to use more and more of those blindness technique, which I'm ready for, and I'm prepared, and I'm glad I had them. It's hard, but it's worth it. And I think what you're doing is incredible, Jeff. I mean, this podcast that you're doing. I mean, why a podcast? It's hard to do.
Remember, Dan, this is about you.
It's not easy.
Okay, podcasting is just an extension of teaching, I feel. I mean, I used to teach. I used to tutor. I really enjoy it. And what podcasting does for me is gives me an opportunity to capture other people's experiences, because experience is the best teacher, and share them with other people. Give them hope, just like you're doing right now. Your experiences at Blind Incorporated.
Exactly. And if they didn't give me what they had, I wouldn't have the job that I have. I wouldn't have been able to write a book. I wrote that book on a computer that State Services for the Blind bought for me. I wrote that book on a computer using voiceover software from the Mac, because then I could write query letters to agents and publishers that were error-free, that were not filled with a bunch of errors because I couldn't see what I was actually writing. Again, another example of just because you have sight doesn't mean that you can get somewhere in the world. It was the techniques that I learned, that what Al gave me, what Emily gave me, what Lori gave me, what George gave me down in the shop. George Wurzel, man. Yeah.
He's my guru.
He is an incredible George. You would just listen to him as you worked. And he would leave you alone with the table saw, and you're petrified of what's going to happen to you. Because George is off doing something else, talking. But nobody lost any limbs. Nobody. No. He was an excellent instructor, wood instructor.
Isn't that something? You go to State Services for the Blind. They issue a computer, you go to training, and you write a book, and now it's published.
Literally, I'm glad you said it that way, because that's exactly what happened.
Well, congratulations on your book, One Day in the Eucalyptus, Eucalyptus Tree. At first, I was wondering, why he says it twice, and there's a comma in the title. But now, when I say it, it just makes so much sense.
Yep. Yep. One day in a eucalyptus tree. It just sounds fun, isn't it? Isn't eucalyptus yummy? I love it. It's a great word.
I spell checked for about 7 minutes. Eucalyptus. I'm sitting there going, you. Okay, it's not a U. So then I picked up my phone and I said, Siri, spell eucalyptus. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, it is. It is a strange. I still have trouble spelling it because it's a hard word. Most people can't spell eucalyptus. That would be like one of those spelling bee words that
yeah,
like, you would
for
win
for 4 to 8 year olds, right?
Spell eucalyptus. Well, hopefully, if they read the book, you know they'll know how to spell eucalyptus. Maybe that will allow someone to win the spelling bee one day.
There you go. Well, thank you so much, Daniel, for taking time away from your family to share with us your journey, your experiences, your successes, your struggles, and congratulations on the publication of your first book, One Day in the Eucalyptus Tree, available on Amazon, let me say. And thank you very much. I think it's time we let you get back to your family.
Well, yes. Thank you very much, Jeff.
Well, thank you.
Am I done? I think so, LaVon.
She just called the shot there.
Yeah, I think she did.
Have her say goodbye and we'll close out. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Yeah, LaVon, can you say goodbye? Bye. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Thanks for listening, and it was a great pleasure to talk to Dan Bernstrom. Check out his book, One Day in the Eucalyptus Tree, on Amazon.
When we share
what we see through each other's eyes, we can then begin to bridge the gap
between the limited expectations and the realities
of blind abilities.
For more podcasts with a blindness perspective, check us out on the web at www.blindabilities.com, on Twitter at blindabilities, download our app from the App Store, Blind Abilities, that's two words, or send us an email at info@blindabilities.com. Thanks for listening.